Hey, you guys remember meat? They got a retextured meat substitute here. It tastes just like zombie takeout. Hello and welcome to Zombie Takeout, the B-movie and cult movie show. I'm John.
Hello, I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, a few things to go over. I finally saw The Shape of Water this past weekend. Yeah, I saw the Best Picture after the awards. Well, I think a lot of people will be doing that since it won Best Picture. Absolutely loved it. Highly recommend it. One thing I will say, it's a fable.
Okay.
It's all subtext and symbolism and metaphor. The surface story about the woman falling in love with the amphibian man, as he's called in the credits, not what the movie's about. And I think I have a predisposition to that sort of thing because I'm just realizing Fooly Cooly is the same way. You know, the surface story is not what it's about. You know, and I just before we started tonight realized they're fables.
And you like some good old-fashioned fish fucking, right?
I mean, that is in the movie, but that is absolutely not what it's about. again, remember, symbolism, metaphor, all of that.
They can't even make a porn parody of it, though. It's like we've been robbed of it, you know?
Well, yeah, sure. There won't be a porn parody because it's right there in the movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to some news. Very good news. You may have heard about this. This is from Screen Rant. The entire Monty Python catalog is headed to Netflix.
Nice.
Fans of the legendary sketch comedy troupe Monty Python can rejoice as Netflix has acquired the rights to the group's entire catalog. This includes all of Monty Python's notable projects for both film and TV. The Python collection arrives on Netflix in Canada in the UK, as well as other currently unspecified worldwide markets on April 15th. Unfortunately, Netflix in the US won't get access to Python until later this year.
What?
It's a rights thing, and I mean, we get everything first anyway, so it's only fair that, you know, the UK gets it first since it's Python, and, you know, we get it later. It's a nice change of pace, I guess, for the rest of the world anyway.
Yeah.
Netflix is also said to be considering the creation of new original comedy content featuring members of Monty Python. Which members would participate in these shows or exactly what format they would take is unclear at present. I think we can speculate about that.
Well, they can do whatever they want, so it's... perfect for them.
They own the rights, but I'm saying, and as far as which Pythons they're bringing in for new stuff,
right?
I mean, Chapman and Jones are out, of course.
Why not?
of course, Graham Chapman died in the 80s, and for those who don't know, and for those who don't know, Cherry Jones has dementia, so yeah. He's out. I think Gilliam's probably pretty happy making movies. I don't think he'll come back. For Netflix
I could see him producing a little something for them, you know, just a little animation.
Something quick he can do in his off time.
I wonder what he would be able to do with the technology today, animation wise.
That is a good point. That might be interesting to see. I hope you're right.
And why hasn't he done it in a feature length film, really, is the bigger
that's
question.
True. Why hasn't he done an
animator
film?
For Monty Python?
Hasn't done an animated film.
Done an animated film.
That's a good point. I think Cleese is probably pretty comfortable where he is. You know, he doesn't seem the nostalgic type. He'll do the one-off reunion now and then, but I don't see him committing to a Netflix thing.
Well, the odd thing, you said Netflix money. Netflix can pay a lot of money if they want to.
That's a good point. Yeah, I guess.
Like Dave Chappelle. They paid him a lot of money.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm underestimating Netflix's financial potential.
I'm trying to think of the other comedians. They've thrown a lot of money at it. I mean, Dave Chappelle has done like 4 Netflix specials, and I forget. Mm. They've paid him a ridiculous amount of money to do
they
it.
They also kind of revived his career.
Well,
he
right.
He wasn't
well,
really doing much before them.
He wasn't doing anything anywhere. Like he didn't put anything out. He didn't tour or anything.
He kind of disappeared in the early thousands.
Yeah. And they just threw all this money at him. He said, well, I guess I could come back for this.
So, yeah. Maybe Cleese. The two I'm really expecting are Idol and Palin.
Yeah.
Because if I recall correctly, they used to write together and you know, they're not really doing much these days. So I definitely see those two coming back. I don't see Cleese coming back, but maybe Netflix will pay him enough.
I think so, because, I mean, he's been touring. I think he needs money, I think, Cleese.
Oh, okay.
Remember, he's been divorced and everything?
Oh, true. I mean, I would love to see, I mean, John Cleese is my favorite. I'd love to see him come back. But I definitely see Idol and Palin getting involved. And animation from Gilliam would be great.
Yeah.
One more quick story. Siffy's Sharknado movie franchise to end with time travel themed finale. This is from TV Line. All good campy things must come to an end. Siffy has greenlit a sixth and final Sharknado film. TV Line has learned exclusively the currently untitled Sharknado 6 is slated to bow this summer, and we'll find the franchise diving into uncharted water time travel. Not a lot in the article that we didn't already know, except that it is confirmation that this is the last Sharknado movie.
Or is it?
Well, as we've said, this is a good thing. We both want it to end. And as much as I am fond of the series, there's nowhere else to go.
Right.
And this
time
is
time travel is a fit again.
Yeah, and this is the best way to go out on just the biggest, most epic, most ridiculous way possible. Just throw everything at the wall. You know, Hitler riding a dinosaur. Actually, no, that another movie did that.
Yes.
What was the one we reviewed it?
It was something about Nazis at the center of the earth.
Nazis in space. It was the one where we were
talking crazy.
It was the sequel to Nazis on the one with Nazis on the moon, I think.
Right.
I don't remember the name. That had Hitler on dinosaur. But, you know, they're going to have Hitler. They're going to have dinosaurs. They just need to go through history and just be as insane as possible. And that will make me very happy. And it will be a beautiful end of the series. Anyway, finally, on to this week's movie. Speaking of insane. From 1979, Americathon. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Clairvoyance. When you're right, you're right. But did you really need to be this right?
And also brought to you by the National Indian Knitting Enterprises. I'm not a bad guy. I've got to eat. All right. So, America is in debt. It's the year 1998. In the future, of course. The gas crisis never ended in the 70s. But yet people still have their cars. They couldn't give them up. But America is in debt to a person who is going to foreclose on America. So our president, who has to decide what to do exactly... does not have a lot of good ideas.
He's named Chet Roosevelt. I think the name says a lot.
He's going to auction off or raffle off Grant's tomb. But they finally wise up and hire a consultant who suggests you have to have a telethon.
And is there anything more emblematic of the 70s and early 80s than a telethon?
Yeah, well, I think I even remember them in the mid-80s, some telethons, too.
But they think they were kind of a 70s and 80s thing.
That people just called up to give their money to a cause. I guess public television still does that to this day, really.
But they do pledge drives, not telethons. They
don't have
the ridiculous stage show with all the call screeners. They just, you know, show their best stuff and, you know, beg people to call between shows.
And give tote bags in return, So they hire an actor from who's a former movie star, but now a sitcom star, and they do a telethon for an entire month, which I don't think that's done.
No, nobody's done that.
Even
Jerry Lewis, it was like a week.
Yeah, it was just the weekend.
Oh, it was the weekend, okay.
I think it was usually the Labor Day weekend, the Jerry Lewis telethon. Right. And so they have a lot of terrible acts. There's a lot of people trying to sabotage this telethon. And a few military attempts at taking over the telethon. The president gets kidnapped in the middle of the telethon.
Harvey Korman dances, which is one of the most disturbing things I've seen.
Yeah, there's a lot of disturbing in this. But hilarity ensues.
Mm-hmm. And it opens with these claymation dinosaurs. I mean, Stan Winston would be proud. It was very creative.
Yeah.
Although, right out of the gate, I have to nitpick the science. And I don't think they knew this back in the 70s. I don't think they knew this in 79. But oil isn't dinosaur remains. It's actually plant remains. That's what turned into oil. I have to nitpick that. though
it's like the joke from Airplane too, you know, in the beginning it was dark and then there were the dinosaurs and they died and turned to oil because it was like, you know, tell me about this from the top, you know.
So they start in prehistoric times and then they jump to the 70s and it's kind of the history of where they got in 98. And they're talking about the gas crisis and they mentioned that people were nozzle whipped, which is just a fascinating image. And there's also mention of lynching the previous president before Chet Roosevelt.
Yeah, well.
That's edgy. I mean, that's not a word I use often, but that's edgy. Talking about lynching the president.
It was kind of jarring, really, because I mean, it's just, you know, it's sweet old Jimmy Carter. I mean, granted, there were a lot of people angry at him at the time and stuff, but and this is George Carlin, of course, doing the narration.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, it is edgy.
And Chet Roosevelt, who they bring in just because he has the same name as a former president, John Ritter's character.
Well, he's not immediately after.
He wasn't
after Carter. There was an Eisenhower.
Right.
I don't know if he was a clone or a son or whatever.
David Eisenhower. Yes.
Yeah. So right, they just elect presidents because they have presidential names.
Right. And then Chet Roosevelt, and as we were talking about before the show, Chet Roosevelt is Jerry Brown.
Right. It's sort of like an indictment of the boomer generation and in general, I thought, and how, but yeah, you're right. It is Jerry Brown because this is a very California centric movie too.
California Uber Relish should have been the theme song for the movie.
Definitely.
I don't think it had been written by, I think it was an 80s song, but still it should have been, it would have fit perfectly. Someone should recut that.
I think it was about a year away from coming out actually.
Oh, okay.
It was really, if not around the same time, but probably this was done before the song was recorded. Yeah. So in fact, I'm very surprised the second Bush administration actually named their Crawford Ranch the Western White House with this movie in existence.
Yeah. This movie predicted a lot of things.
Because, I mean, you can see Jerry Brownham, but you could also easily see Clinton.
Oh, yeah.
You could see the second Bush in them, too.
Yeah. I apologize for that sound. Whenever I turn off my mic, it comes back to me. But the film's official coming attractions trailer included the quote, "See Americathon at your local theater before it happens in your own front yard." Here are the predictions it got right. People's Republic of China embracing capitalism and becoming a global economic superpower. Nike becoming a huge multinational conglomerate.
Right.
The collapse of the USSR. The depletion of U.S. crude oil production. An America with a devalued dollar and heavily in debt to foreign lenders. The prevalence of reality TV.
Okay.
Network television dealing with previously taboo subjects as normal. Mount Monty Rushmore, Harvey Korman's character, stars in a sitcom called Both Father and Mother, in which he plays a cross-dressing single father in the title role. And the film's narrative also mentions the Schlong Show, with Chuck Norris hosting, of course, a game show where contestants are judged by their reproduction organs, and the governor of California becoming president, which happened in reality a year after the film's release.
You're right.
So this is... That was a reason for my sponsor. This movie was clairvoyant, and I could honestly see our current administration selling off Grant's Tomb. Or no, it's Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Now, the problem I had with some of their predictions, $400 billion in debt? I mean, that's cute to think that that's like... honestly, the national debt was at that level like 7 years before this movie was even made. So I'm not even sure why they picked the number 400 billion for 1998. Good,
or it was written, it was based on a play by Fireside Theater alumni Phil Proctor and Peter Bergman. And I suspect they maybe wrote it before that was the case.
Maybe. But I mean, the gas crisis was a major component of this.
True.
I mean, unless that wasn't in, they just kept that number. But I mean, you'd think they would have been up to like trillions at least,
right?
Which, of course, we were in that, like, even before 98, I mean,
and a lot of the movie is kind of stuck in the 70s. They don't think things will change all that much.
Right.
98. I mean, the fashion is very 70s.
I mean, they were off by only, I guess they were off by a decade when it comes to the Beach Boys still having cultural relevancy.
There's a Beach Boys song in this movie. Sounds very 80s. It was very ahead of its time in production wise.
Yeah.
But it plays about 5 times in the movie and it will get stuck in your head.
It's awful too.
It's
god awful.
Anything Beach Boys after the 60s is awful, and I'm not a big fan of the 60s stuff.
Well, it's Brian Wilson-less Beach Boys.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's more the point, yeah. I loved the name of the media consultant they bring in to try to fix the fix everything. Eric McMurkin.
Oh, okay.
Google Merkin, if you don't know. I did think the opening titles were a bit too long. But that's, you know, I'm nitpicking because I don't really have a lot to criticize about this movie. I loved that the president had been a graduate of Est, Scientology, TM, and Primal Group Therapy.
I didn't even know Scientology was really a thing back then, but I guess it was.
I think it started in the 60s or 50s maybe. But
I mean, it had to have been really small back then, though.
Biomedics was starting to pick up steam in the 70s. Because the 70s were all about the self-help. You know, for those anyone watching who doesn't remember the 70s, Est, TM might not ring a bell, but Est, well, I don't remember the exact name, what it stood for, but it was this self-help seminar thing that was found to be kind of abusive. Of course, we've all heard of Scientology. TM is transcendental meditation. But I just love how they threw in all of those 70s self-help things and then Primal Group Therapy.
But you talked about the credits being long. It's not even just that they were long. I just kind of knew I wasn't going to really like this movie from those credits, honestly.
Interesting. Okay.
Because, I mean, were we so suburbanized even back then to think that, you know, life or civilization would just end as we knew it because we didn't have cars anymore? You know, I mean, I suppose if LA is your entire life.
Yeah, it's very 70s centric and it's very California centric.
Right. And you know, the fact that that was kind of like the joke, like, look at these people bicycling to work and stuff.
People are jogging and bicycling and skateboarding to work. You will jog for the master race. I think that's why I got a kick out of that part.
Well, I mean, that line, of course, is about, you know, physical fitness
being
such a priority. But yeah, for this, you know, to say that that's like, you know, look at how dumb this all is of people just not driving in their car. It was kind of like, okay.
I got a kick out of the jogging on the road to work and like stopping at, you know, at the lights and everything. Although I do think that, and I do think that the idea of buying America once it defaults is a great kind of subplot. Because Fred Willard's character has this subplot where he wants the telethon to fail so that the Native American guy who lent, you know, America all the money that they now owe is, you know, it defaults on that loan. He gets the country, and then Fred Willard's character is going to buy it out from under him.
And Fred Willard was young, by the way.
Yeah, at some point, Fred Willard was young.
I
think early in 79.
Could not believe. I mean, I've even seen pictures of him probably earlier than that I can't remember the name of the group he was in around here. Second City, right. Yeah, there's pictures of him there, you know, for when he was like way younger. But yeah, here it is, 79, young Fred Willard in his like, jacket.
And there was a line about a guy who was dressed up as a clown. They're looking for host for the telethon, and where the hosts are considering this clown who they say was trying to sell oil well lamps and like pushing for, you know, oil well lamps.
Right.
And they pushed a known environmentalist basically, and they were ruling him out for that reason. Kind of ahead of its time in that sense, that they were kind of, that the government in the movie was anti-environmentalist.
But whale oil is more finite than actual oil.
I think they were just trying to create the straw man environmentalist.
Yeah.
Now the sitcom scene was intolerably accurate. There's, you know, the one Monty was on. I just said it a minute ago. Both father and mother.
Yeah.
There was a clip from it, and it's not even a stereotype, like an over exaggeration of a sitcom from the time period. It's dead on. Like it's small wonder. it's that kind of sitcom, and it just kind of hurt. Because I used to watch a lot of
Coach's Kid, you know. Oh, but it was kind of weird.
Also disturbing as hell, John Ritter and Guy Leiner for one, you know, speech that he did, you know, televised speech.
John Ritter in general in this,
creepy as
hell. and I mean, probably the best performance in the movie, and the redeeming quality of it.
It's a shame that Ritter got pigeonholed as Jack Tripper.
Yeah,
because he was a brilliant actor, particularly in comedy. But he also did some great dramatic stuff. And he kind of walks the line in this. It's a comedic role, but he plays it beautifully dark.
Yeah, and he plays it straight. And I mean, but that's in it. I mean, he just has this stare where you're just like, holy fuck.
And I think puke rock could sell these days. There's this one of the acts, Mooling Jackson, a rock singer who kind of bellows and screeches and reminds me a lot of the Diamanda Galas, if you've heard her.
I thought they were taking a dig at Yoko Ono. Honestly.
They were taking a dig at Yoko Ono, but I think that could sell these days. I mean, I've heard music that's very similar. Speaking of music, it was great to see a cameo from Elvis Costello.
Right. Yeah, and, it was another highlight.
You know, in that bit, they refer to the fact that Buckingham Palace had been turned into Limey Land. This is where it's very Idiocracy. And there's also a scene where Meatloaf, as this daredevil, Evel Knievel's type, fights the last car.
Which he basically
full fights a Camaro.
What? If it's the last car, why would you just destroy it? Why would that raise money? Who would be happy to see that if it was the last car?
It's emblematic of their situation, I suppose.
But if you think about the movie, the whole point was that Americans love their cars so much that we would hold on to them even when they don't work. You know, like it's Better Cars and Gardens or the magazine. I mean, you know. And then to just have him like destroy a car was just like, what? This doesn't make any sense.
I wasn't looking to the movie for sense or cohesion. I was kind of treating it like Kentucky Fried Movie or, you know, a Zucker Brothers thing where I was just interested in the parodies and the statements. Like Family Infighting as a reality show where a mother and son actually box each other.
Right. And of course, Jay Leno
as the son.
There were so many people in this movie. It is kind of head spinning.
Yeah, yeah. One of my prospective titles was Cavalcade of Cameos, but they weren't cameos. They were, you know, actually cast in the movie.
Yeah.
And I was also going to call it Stunt Casting the Movie. I was going to suggest that for a title.
But these people weren't known.
Wasn't stunt casting at the time. Yeah, that's why.
No one knew who Jay Leno was.
Right. Yeah. They're all. I mean, Harvey Korman was the only one, and John Ritter. They were the names at the time.
And Riegert.
Peter Riegert.
He was still, you know, I don't know if this is after Animal House or before.
It's
pretty close to it, though. He didn't have, I mean.
But in addition to that, there's a scene where Oklahoma Ray, the daredevil, Meatloaf's character, auctions off his blood.
Yeah.
And I loved the line about groping a sheep. They're talking about what acts to, you know, bring on to, you know, get the people interested because, you know, the telethon is bombing. And Monty, Corman's character, suggests groping a sheep.
They want sex.
Mm-hmm. Could have done without all the Eddie money.
they did spend their money on the soundtrack, though. Yeah.
There's a lot of Eddie Money in this movie.
There's a couple Eddie Money songs in there. You got Elvis Costello. Yeah, a
couple of Elvis songs. Love the use of Don't Want to Go Back to Chelsea. Love that song. And then obviously the repeated Beach Boys.
Sydney the Shrink from MASH was an Arab.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was him.
I could have sworn one of the Arabs was also Eric Bogosian. But I don't.
Was he active at the time? That wasn't long before his one man show stuff. That was only a few years later. But no, that was 90s. That was 90s.
But I don't think he was ever credited.
Right. No. He would have been very early in his career.
Yes. At least
he was in it. I like that Monty got his wish. Someone was shot on stage.
Right.
It was him. Also, by the way, to promote the movie in 1979, Ted Koombs roller skated across the United States and back and gained a place in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Of course.
Of course, there had to be a giant stunt to promote this movie. Sequels and remakes? We're practically living in a remake. I don't think we need it.
Yeah.
On to Brains. This is where it's going to get interesting because I really like the movie. I'm going 5.
Wow. There were some good ideas behind it, some great people, but they just, it didn't seem like they knew what the hell they were making here. a lot of the jokes were edgy, weird, but they just fell flat. So I'm going 2.
Oh, wow. All right. And what have you learned?
The 70s seem like a fun place, but you would never want to visit or live there.
And along very similar lines, I learned that the 70s were weird. And not in a good way.
No.
Alright, so that's it for Americathon. Give this video a like if you enjoyed it. Subscribe if you haven't. Of course, down in the description, you'll find all of our links. Well, you'll find the trailer for Americathon and the IMDb page and all of our links. Social media, links to subscribe to the audio version of this show via RSS and iTunes, both of our shows. And our email address and voicemail number. And of course, until next time, when we'll be reviewing Perfume, Story of a Murderer, with a guest, finally having another guest on. Of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life,
there you are.